Today's happy burst of Young and Happy is brought to you by DollarShaveClub.com. For a limited time at DollarShaveClub.com, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razor is just a few bucks a month. That's a $15 value for only $5. In your first month box, you'll get an awesome weighty handle and a full cassette of four cartridges and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price. There are no hidden fees, no commitments. Cancel anytime you like. You can get this offer exclusively at DollarShaveClub.com/yaw. Y-A-H for young and happy. Yaw. DollarShaveClub.com/yaw to get this deal. Now listen, so these guys support us. We're Team Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club is Team Young and Happy. They support our show. We gotta return the favor. So if you gotta get, you gotta shave and you need razors, let's use them. Let's just use Dollar Shave Club. That's our guys. That's our girls. Whatever. Okay. There are people. Let's use them for our razors. DollarShaveClub.com/youngandhappy.
I'm just trying to make things more fun and more interactive.
Glad from a wild way, baby.
Did I express myself? Did I let my light shine through?
You can do anything you put your mind to. Never give up on your dreams.
I'll be living for the moment.
Hit, hit.
Every day, Saturday, and every day I feel good.
And I'm going to win, and I'm going to be happy, and I'm going to be blessed.
Happy. I'm happy every day. Love yourself. You know what I'm saying?
This is Young and Happy.
And we are joined this afternoon by Mr. Tank Sinatra, relation to Frank, to be determined. First question for you, Tank. Are you related to Frank Sinatra?
No, man.
Shit.
You want me to leave?
That's
yeah,
tough.
Can you mind, man? I'm sorry.
You want me to croon?
You got
to
croon or leave.
Yo, I'm not even like a fan of Frank Sinatra,
what?
To be honest. I know. I'm from New York.
What?
I'm...
How many Sinatras are there?
Just me and him. No, I knew a girl with the last name Sinatra, which I always thought that was interesting.
It's an interesting name.
I wanted to know who she was, but I never got to like ask her if she was related or not. I'm pretty sure she wasn't. But it is an interesting, catchy, memorable name. That's why I use it. My name strictly is based on the fact that I'm big, Tank.
Tank,
you are. I can confirm. This is a podcast, so it's only an audio experience. I can confirm large.
You can hear my shoulders.
They speak to us. Yeah.
And I'm from New York, and I have blue eyes, so like old blue eyes. It was like not that much thought. It just worked, and then I changed it, and then I started to realize how important the name was to my growth. Like, that's a catchy nickname.
It's
if I was just George...
You'd be a schmuck.
Stuck at 50,000.
Yeah. What'd you change it to?
What did I change it to?
When you had your brief.
No, I started off as George Resch.
Oh, I understand. Like I thought you were saying.
I started out like a dad. Like, I just used my full name.
And then you upgraded to Tank Sinatra.
Tank Sinatra.
Now, I hear you got a book out.
I do, yeah.
What's that book called?
That book is called Happy is the New Rich.
Hmm.
Damn, boy.
What's you see, up?
You know,
that's a good-ass title.
Welcome to Young and Happy. Please, I feel like it makes sense that you're here. So, tell us a little bit about the book and why you wrote it. You have to give the contents. We'll make the people buy it.
That's cool. I mean, I've actually been giving away the book for free on my Instagram because there's certain people in countries that can't get it, and I mean, it's $12.95, and people are talking about not being able. You know, they can't afford it. Whatever. It's enough for me to give it away for people to read it. It's more important to me that people read it than they buy it. Some people are going to have to buy it to read it. But I want people to get the content. And like Young and Happy, when I saw this come through, I was like, yeah, that's cool. I'm going to have a good time. You know what I mean? Anybody who's – the simpler you keep it, the better. Young and Happy is obviously very descriptive.
Right.
But Happy is the New Rich, the saying was born – it was born out of like my lowest financial time ever. I had absolutely – actually had like $0 and 0 cents in the bank account.
Damn.
It's when I was living in California.
How do you get down to 0 cents? That's what's crazy about it. Spending the last cents is
hard. No, I didn't spend it. I'm dumb with money, but I'm not that dumb. So I was dumb enough for long enough that the IRS came and got me.
Mm.
And they stripped it right down to zero. $0 and 0 cents.
You just weren't paying taxes?
So I was working in restaurants at the time, or before, like 3 or 4 years prior. And when you worked in restaurants in like the early 2000s, like you just made money. You didn't have to talk about it. It was cash.
Yeah.
So the restaurant that I was working for was apparently filing different W-2s than we were getting to keep their books clean, but we were getting stuck with the tax bill.
Right.
So I justified in my head, I'm like, I don't have to pay that. But the IRS disagreed, and after a while...
They disagreed, huh?
They came and got the money, and that was it. It was like, I woke up in California, 3,500 miles away from my friends, my family, the home I grew up in, and I was like, this is fucking bad. Like, I'm not going to make it out of here. Can I curse?
Yeah, bleep it out? Yeah.
Okay, fuck. Fuck yeah, I mean. I was like, fuck. I was like, fucking fuck. No, so I woke up, and I was like, I have to figure something out. So thankfully... I had friends and family that could wire me a little money to get me through, but right. I remember being on a treadmill at the gym in California, and I was like literally on a treadmill, and then in my mind I was on a treadmill, and I just kept saying, I need to make more money. I need money. Like, I need to make more money right now. Like, I'm not going to make it out here. And then something clicked, and I was like, no, dude, like, you need to enjoy your time out here. You're in California. You're alive. You have both your legs. You have a car. You have friends. Make the most of it. Shouldn't cost money to make experiences happen, and that's what I started doing. I started going to the beach. I started going for walks and hikes and doing, like, real happy people stuff where I just didn't want to be defined by my bank account, like how much money I had. I didn't want to be defined by the number on the scale. I didn't want to be defined by how quickly that girl I thought was cute texted me back. I just let go of, like, all that extra stuff that makes you feel, like, more – like, makes you feel better, but it's fake. It's fleeting. It's not real. And it doesn't come from within. It comes from without. So, of course, it can't be real. You know what I mean? And then I just started writing.
That's beautiful. That's fantastic.
When you say you started writing, what were you writing? Are you like a journal or?
So it was not so much journaling like at the end of the day. It was more like if something passed through my mind that I thought would be beneficial to other people or to me later on, I just jotted it down on my phone. So I didn't like sit down to write. I just, you ever have a thought that you thought was good and cool and then you don't write it down and then it leaves and then it's gone?
You have to write it down.
About every single time I've ever had one, I didn't write it down.
Yeah. I mean, advice to, like, listeners, like, you have to write the ideas down, right? Like, that. Would you recommend that to other people, just keeping those nuggets?
You have to, if you want to keep them. Like, Lil Wayne has a line, which he said, I heard when I was in California, he said, I think about more than I forget. So he doesn't write anything down, but his mind is always going. So if he thinks about 100% of stuff, he keeps 30, and that's what he makes the music with. Like, I don't have 100%.
Yeah. Right.
I got to write everything down.
So you started, so what's the timeline on this? This is what?
10 years.
10 years ago. So you start writing stuff down and then take us from there.
So I made a video blog website, which was called happyisthenewrich.com. And I was doing that, which gave me a lot of fulfillment, but didn't get a lot of follower, like didn't get any traction on the internet. So like anything that doesn't give you feedback, it died. And then, but I always had the shirts. I had the Happy is the New Rich shirts. I always thought about it. People always ask me, what are you doing with that? And then the book was born when I got to like maybe like 150 or 200,000. I did an interview with some online website, very, very small. But in the article, I said I was writing a book. But that book that I was writing in that interview never happened. I actually stopped writing like that day for no reason. It was just like it was one of those things where you took the energy out of it and expressed it and then it dies.
Right.
You know, so a publisher reached out to me and he said, hey, you're writing a book. How are you publishing it? How far along are you? I'd like to talk to you about it. So I got on the phone with this guy and he was in Portland at the time. And I think he's still there, but he's all over the place. And the conversation was just one of those like God-inspired moments where like I couldn't deny that this was a guy I needed to work with. Mm. Even if we didn't write that book, I needed to do something with him, you know? We both were familiar with very obscure motivational authors who had a tremendous impact on both of our lives. I got sober when I was 22, and I'm now 36. He's the same deal, which is so rare. So rare to meet somebody who stopped drinking young and stayed stopped.
Why you stopped drinking so young?
Oh, it was a disaster. It was a wreck.
Like what kind of disaster?
Do you know what somebody who's too drunk looks like?
Sure do.
Yeah,
you were too drunk all the time. Was it like outward? Like, were you like out like fighting people? Were you hurting yourself? Didn't enjoy life.
I got into some fights. I hurt some people. I hurt myself. I didn't enjoy even a moment of my life. Like every day I woke up, I was like, "Fuck!" Like, how am I going to get through this? It was like a death sentence every day.
And you didn't feel like I'm 22. Like this is what people do at 22. Like we drink.
No, not like
it
that.
Was more...
22. Yeah, maybe you drink a little more than normal. But I knew that what I was doing was out of the realm of normal.
Like, I'm sorry. Go
no,
ahead.
No. Go ahead.
How did you get to the point where you could be sober?
It's like anything. Like usually when people make a change in their life, it's not usually a massive event that spins them left, and they keep going that way. Because if something big happens and it hurts, the further you get away from it, the less you feel like you need to do anything about it. So if you have like a massive accident, or you get divorced, or you lose somebody in your life, there's heat, and when the heat subsides, you're not motivated to move as fast. This was like a slow grinding away of my self-esteem, like who I was. You know what I mean? So I got sober young, and that's very rare. A lot of people that come in are get sober are like 35, 40.
Was it a rehab thing, or did you just like say like I'm just gonna?
No, I got together with some people and figured out how I was gonna stay stopped.
Awesome.
Yeah. But when you it's kind of one of those things. Like you guys are into sports, obviously, yeah. Right? Who's your favorite team?
I'm a Sixers guy.
So are the Sixers good?
Absolutely not.
So when you meet a Sixers fan, do you feel bonded to them?
I do have a little bit of there's a little bit of a connection.
You feel like you share their pain.
Right.
Right? So with this guy, it was like, when you meet somebody else who doesn't drink and stop drinking young, it's like an instant bond. You have something big in common.
Right.
Not something little. It's like a big part of your life. So I had written this book that I didn't even know I had written over 10 years. So I said to him, we can do either this book that I have that's like a quarter of the way through that I don't know how I'm going to finish, or I have a book, but it's like totally different. And what allowed me to do that book was a couple of things. A, it's 2017 and you can do whatever the fuck you want and nobody can tell you otherwise. There's no publisher was going to tell me that I needed to chapter it. Nobody was going to tell me I had to use this word and not or that word. And so I'm a big Jay-Z fan. I know a lot about his early career. And if you ever listen to Can I Live on Reasonable Doubt, it doesn't sound like any other song at that time or at this time because he didn't know what he was doing. So we just rapped for like 47 bars and then did a little hook. Then he did 12 bars and then he did a hook. It wasn't 16 a hook, 16 hook, 16 hook. So with that in mind, I was like, if you're good enough, you can do something out of the box and you don't have to follow the formula and nobody can tell you otherwise. So, I mean, obviously that was a little arrogant. I'm not Jay-Z, you know what I mean? But I figured he wasn't Jay-Z back then either. He just wanted to create and that's what he did. So the book doesn't fit. Like I would have never gotten it published by Random House or Penguin or somebody like that. But this little guy in Portland, this little publisher, took care of all the costs, and we've been, I don't know what a good amount of sales is. I would be happy if I sold 50.
Right.
Because that means my brain is sitting in 50 people's homes.
It seems like you're a really like a principled guy. It seems like your principles carry themselves through like the way that you handle your account, like not going through like advertisers or letting people like sell stuff on your page, or like just the way you talk about all these things. Where does that come from?
So principles and conditions are an interesting topic, which I think about a lot. Mm-hmm. So I just, if you live conditionally, like unconditional love is something that a parent has for their child, or you should have for your spouse or friends or whatever. So I don't think being unconditional should just apply to that. I think you should be unconditionally happy and you should be unconditionally generous. You should be generous if you have money or not. Because if you're generous when you don't have money, you'll be generous when you do have money. If you're kind when you're in a bad spot, you'll be kind when you're in a good spot. If you're funny at a funeral, you'll be funny at a bar. You know what I mean? So the principles that I set forth are very hard to – that's like what my book is. That's why I took as much information out of the book as possible. Like I didn't sandwich my principles in stories because I didn't want the stories to distract you from what I thought was important. You know what I mean?
Of course, yeah.
So what are like what is the format? I haven't seen the book.
So it's the subtitle is and 207 other light bulb moments. So light bulb moments is basically when that light bulb goes off over a cartoon character's head and they go, oh shit, okay, that's how I should be looking at this. So every time I had a light bulb moment, I mean, I had like 1,500 of those things that I got down to 500, that I got down to 300, that I got down to 207. And it was like cutting off limbs.
You had 1,500 notes just sitting in your phone or like around like that you had accumulated over the years.
That was what I pulled out of the thousands of notes that I had.
Wow.
So I had more. I had a lot more. But some of it was just...
Like, what's the formula of, like, what are your notes, what does it look like? What do your notes look like?
It's, a lot of them are in the Notes app on my phone.
Right.
But a lot of them were emails, because back in 2000, you know, 2007, 2008, I had a BlackBerry, and the Notes app was very difficult to use. It wasn't like open it up, 1, 2, 3. So instead of doing that, I would text myself an email, you know?
So you just mined through all there and found all the good nuggets?
A lot of emails, yeah.
That's crazy.
Very tedious.
So, I mean, what you are most known for is your social media right now. You obviously have this incredible like lifestyle brand, this book that you're working on. Can you tell us a little bit about how you've built that and what has made you so good at social media, something that a lot of people try hard to be good at today?
So social media, you have to express yourself consistently. You can't be all over the place. One day you're a drunk guy, the next day you're making vegan jokes. You have to be yourself, or you can get somewhat far, but you're not going to be able to sustain that. So with the memes, I think my success, like we were talking before, I'm not an engineering guy. I'm not a mathematical guy. I don't understand it. I would love to, and I've tried, but it just doesn't seem to vibe with my brain. But when I was six, I took an IQ test, and obviously there was math, and then there was an emotional part. And the emotional part, I remember the psychologist or the school counselor or whatever said, tell me what's happening in this picture, right? So it was a picture of an old man standing behind an old woman who was sitting on a couch, and he had his hand on her shoulder. So I would imagine any typical six-year-old would say, there's a couch, and there's an old man, and there's an old woman. Like, they would just describe what was in the picture. I came up with, like, this giant 3-minute story about what happened and why they looked the way they looked. So when I see a picture, I just see more in the picture. It's hard to describe. Like, I try and pull some kind of emotion out of it.
But emotional intelligence is kind of where it comes from.
Sure, yeah. So because of that, so you had the book smart stuff in the IQ test, and you had that stuff, and my IQ wound up being like 134 or something like that because of how well I did on that.
Really?
My math was low, but it dragged up the average.
Can you talk a little bit about emotional intelligence and like what that means? Like, I've heard like NBA GMs like ridicule a player for having low emotional intelligence. What is that, like how you relate to people? What do you know emotional intelligence to be?
I think it has a lot to do with being able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. So just because I'm from New York and you're from Philly and I have no hair and you have a lot of hair doesn't mean that we can't relate. So if people are comparing themselves to other people, there's identification and there's comparison. If you're comparing, you're never going to be like other people. You're never going to be able to do that. If you're identifying, you'll always find some kind of common ground with somebody and be able to build on that. So if we find out something we have in common, then I can figure out maybe why you feel the way about B than you feel about A. Like, I'm always looking for some kind of, if somebody's trying to be good at losing weight, I try and find out what they're good at. Are you good at business? Okay, so why are you good at business? Because you apply these principles. Apply the same principles to losing weight. It's the same thing.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean?
Like a capacity for empathy almost.
Sure.
And do you think that people they're like emotional like geniuses? Like people who are like so, have such emotional intelligence that they like are like head and shoulders above other people?
I think like anything, if you have a, a predilection for it, you can build on that. But I don't think anybody. I was very discompassionate in my younger years. Super angry. Didn't feel like anybody understood me. Even now, like sometimes it depends on also who I'm with. So if I feel like somebody's putting on a show to get sympathy, I have no sympathy for that. You know what I mean? But if I feel like somebody's really in pain, I really sympathize with that, or I empathize. Compassion, empathy, and sympathy are all very close cousins, but they're very different. And one will get you very close to somebody, and the other one will, you know, keep you far away. If you're thinking that somebody's, like, if I see my wife stubs her toe, and this is like a real example, I wish it wasn't,
right,
but if she stubs her toe and she goes, ow, and I look at her and I don't say anything, and then she goes, ow, again, and then I look at her and she goes, ow, like, and she keeps saying that until I say something, I'm like, oh my God, are you okay? Like, I don't even mean it. You know what I mean?
Because she doesn't mean it with her ow. She just is a signal to you to get.
Yeah, that's like when people laugh. They're like, you're not talking to them, and then they're just like, huh? And you're like, what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll bite. What was that?
What?
Yeah.
What do you want? What?
My mom used to do that to me.
Ha, ha, ha. You're just sitting here silently next to one another. Like, why would you give me that laugh?
And it depends on who's doing it. Like, if I was on the Stairmaster the other day, and this girl was fucking dying. on the Stairmaster. And I was like, yo, what are you watching or listening to? I was interested because I knew she wasn't trying to get my attention. She was just, she couldn't help it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, right.
The last thing you want to do is be laughing on a Stairmaster.
Right.
You're already out of breath. So I knew that it was genuine. And authenticity across the board, like you asked how my account got so big and is so well respected. Like,
right.
If you meet me or if you direct message me or if you look at my page or you read an interview, it's all the same guy.
Who you knew know? That there was such depth to like having a successful like
social page.
Media account? You know what I mean?
You thought we were going to talk about dogs, right?
I had no idea.
So listen, so we got to go. Like, you know, this is obviously, like we said earlier, it's obviously audio, but you're huge. We got to talk about like what's the training look like?
Sure.
Training and eating.
I was born jacked. Straight up, 12 pounds. No, I wasn't that big.
That's amazing.
I've been lifting weights for a long time. I've been lifting weights since I was 13. I grew up fat. So I grew up fat. I saw Pumping Iron at 8. I was trying to sneak workouts at age 9.
The Arnold movie.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, man. Just he's always
so
coming.
Sick.
Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, man. He like makes weightlifting sound like the most amazing thing ever. He talks about how every time he lifts weights, it is an orgasm for him. So he's like, I'm coming when I'm lifting weights. I'm coming when I'm having sex. I'm always coming.
Imagine how satisfied I am.
Are you always coming?
I'm in this constant state of schmear. Just comes all over the place.
Just this lazy rag of fucking.
Yeah.
Always post-coital.
Not interested. So you have to understand also back then, lifting weights and being like that was like not cool.
What do you mean?
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger, if like back in the 70s, if you looked like that, you were considered a bit of like a circus act.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
There's actually another movie with him called Stay Hungry where a woman asks him to flex for her and he takes his shirt off and he flexes and she starts laughing and he fucking rages out and like, you know, I don't know if he throws her or not, probably not because that would be a little too much, but he's like, you know, it's beautiful, you're laughing at me, it's beautiful, you wanted me to flex. And she's like, you just look so ridiculous. That's back then, like, you know, picture the man with like the caveman
right
outfit on.
It wasn't a normal look. People weren't so in tune to lifting and making their bodies look like taking supplements or whatever.
No, there was Jack LaLanne who made being healthy cool.
Right.
That lasted for like 30, 40 years. Then Arnold Schwarzenegger came along and made it cool to be just jacked out of your mind.
Just huge.
Love huge. That.
So you just been lifting for forever? But what do you? What does your diet look like?
So my diet is. When I changed my diet to reflect the work I was doing in the gym, that really did change. I started lifting weights at 13. I got big at 14. I stayed big and fluffy to like 17. Then I lost a lot of the fat by changing my diet, but I stopped lifting. I started running. And then, so fast forward like so many years, but my wife got, I was in California. I was doing like the California fitness guy thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like running up hills and all that nonsense. And then I got back to California, and I said to this is funny if you guys like psychological humor. I was seeing a therapist, and I said to him, I went to him, and he told me that it seemed like I had developed like a little bit of a narcissistic streak, mm-hmm. right? So I go back 2 weeks later, and I sit down. First thing I say is, so I was thinking about what you said about my narcissism. And he looks
That's
at me, and he goes, no shit.
Yeah, I bet you were. I'm sure you were thinking about your own narcissism.
Exactly. So I kind of calmed down on that whole vanity thing, like shaving my chest and tanning and perfect diet and exercise, whatever. And then I met my wife, and she is like beautiful, like the ultimate score. You know what I mean? She's so beautiful, and she's so funny and nice and such a great mom and just everything across the board. So we got married, and then she got pregnant, and I gained more weight than she did.
No way.
When she got pregnant.
Like, so you lost the narcissism real fast.
Right. I don't even know what narcissism meant. You know what I mean?
Forgot narcissism.
Just the total extreme opposite. So God bless her.
That was very supportive of you to do that with her.
I took one for the team.
Yeah, that was very big of you, I thought.
Very big. So then one day we were at a party, and this is how it happens. Like, I've had a couple of these Phoenix moments, and they're always super painful, but then you let go of that judgment of whatever the person said, and you're like, all right, this is like really what's happening, and this is what I need to do. And I was at a party, and I was just crushing chips, crushing pretzels, chips, Doritos, and I had like a cup on my like a hand cup on my chest, and the guy who I work for looks at me and he goes, "Bro, what is that?" And I look at him and I'm like, "It's Doritos." And he goes, "No, like that." And he was talking about my stomach, which was not, I was never like obese, but it was definitely, it had grown a bit over the past year and a half.
You were resting chips on top of it.
It was a table.
Yeah, it was a table. It jutted out at a 90 degree.
Yeah, let's be honest. Yeah, let's be honest. So then she laughed, and I was like, "Yo, whose wife are you? You know what I mean? You're supposed to have my back." So I got a little pissy then, and then we were out to dinner that night, eating, of course, right. And I said to her, "Yo, when he made that joke about me and you laughed, like, what was that about? Were you trying to, like, win points with him or whatever? Or, like, my boss, like, you're trying to look cool?" And she goes, "No." And you could tell it was hard for her to say it. But she goes, "You've definitely gained a lot of weight since we got married." And damn. I was like, "Fucking check, please." I was pissed. But she used the word "definitely" and she used the word "a lot." So it let me know, like, it wasn't like a little thing that she was trying to skirt around. She was like, she went right for it.
Right.
So then the next day I made some changes, and then that was like 5 years ago.
What kind of changes? Like no bread, or is it like a carb thing, a fats thing?
No. So I mean, if your listeners are really interested in how to do this, what they need to know is that your body, so like I talk to people about business and health all the time. Uh-huh. Two principles. So if you have a little business where you work and you buy material and you install it, your overhead is very low. You can survive on $300-$400 a day, right? If you want to just survive. If you have a big business with insurance and overhead and workers' comp and materials and housing and all that, you need a lot more money to survive while you go out of business. So if you're a big dude, you need, let's say, 3,500, 3,300 calories just to break even. If you want to make money, i.e., gain weight, you got to eat more than that. And if you want to lose money or go, you know, lose weight, I'm sorry, you need to eat less than that. It's very simple. You have a break even point, and then you have a shrinking or growing percentage, right, up and down. You right. can't go too big too fast because you'll explode, and you can't go too small too fast because you'll burn out. You know what I mean? So you need to have a healthy split of proteins, fats, and carbs. I don't believe in like that small meal thing. Your body is not a furnace. It's a body.
Right.
There's enzymes and acid that breaks food down, and then it goes different places. It's not a fireplace. So
is that just where you just need to throw a couple logs in every now and then? And like, what's the principle that you're talking about?
Like, yeah,
a bunch
like
of,
you
like,
need
five
to
small
stoke
meals
the metabolism
throughout the day or whatever?
Stoke what? I'm not a fireplace. I'm a human being.
So you're a three-meal-a-day guy? Three squares or just you eat when you want?
I eat like four definite meals a day, and then one little sneak something, and then usually at night I'll eat something stupid. Yeah. Just to keep myself sane.
Okay. So you, it's all calories for you? Don't think it's like...
It's calories and macro split. But timing is irrelevant.
What does that mean?
Macro split. Macros are protein, fats, and carbs. So if you eat 8 ounces of chicken, an ounce of almonds, and a cup of rice, that's 50 grams of carbs, 40 grams of protein, and 17 grams of fat.
Is that a good split?
That's a good split, yeah. 17 is a little high, depending on what you're trying to do, but 10, 10, 20. Like 10 protein, I'm sorry, 10 fat, 10 carbs, 20 protein. That's like what people go off of. That's the base, but everybody's different. And if I figure out what works for me next year, different game. So anybody...
What do you think about all the like the new wave of diets, I guess, right now is like no carb, low carb?
Well, what you're doing, if you're
like
cutting out
paleo, and it's like you almost get rid of them entirely.
If you're cutting out an entire macro group, of course you're going to reduce calories because you're not allowing yourself one entire group of macros. So if you're cutting out carbs, what happens is, and I saw this happen when I was working in a restaurant in California, a guy was asking me these same questions. How do I get in shape? I want to lose some fat, build some muscle. So I gave him like, you know, a basic guideline or whatever. And he goes, didn't listen to a word I said. He goes, I'm just going to go low carb. So
just started with that.
Exactly.
Save you some time.
So what he did was, instead of, let's say this is, I'm not going to remember the meal exactly, but let's say he had steak and rice and I don't know, whatever. So he loses the rice the next day, right? But then the next day he eats the same amount of steak, but no rice. The next day there's a piece of steak and there's a piece of bacon or whatever, or the piece of steak is bigger. So you're still adding food. You can't just cut out one group of macros and expect to lose weight if your calories are not in check. You have to check the calories. Your overhead, your caloric overhead for the day has to be established, and then you have to go off that. You have to take into consideration exercise. It's a lot of work, which is why a lot of people are not in great shape, because it's not easy. You can't just buy a program and get into shape.
But these are some pearls of wisdom, and I mean, people can keep. There's pictures of you out in the world. People can look you up and see if they want to get tanked up. these are the ways to do it.
Or just take our word because we're credible.
We are credible individuals. That's true.
The problem is you can't sell that. You know what I mean? Like when people are like, "What's the secret?" There's no secret. You already know. You just don't want to do it.
There's not like a shortcut. When people ask for a secret, they probably want like a shortcut, but it's really just do the work and just.
The only shortcut you can apply to losing weight is to be patient. It's a mental shortcut. You have to play the long game. You can't just expect to get in the gym in 3 months and just get yourself whipped into shape. Because what I've been going to the gym since I was 13. I'm in the gym for a half an hour to 45 minutes every day. Not every day, like when I go, four to five days a week. So when I meet somebody who at one time in their 20s went to the gym every day for 2 hours for 6 months, they're like, no way. I went to the gym for 2 hours a day and I didn't look like that. It's like, well, if you had done it for 23 years, you might. You might not.
But the 30 minutes is enough to chip away at it.
Like, it's cumulative, right? For sure, 100%. Just like anything, just like saving money, just like developing a relationship with a friend or a significant other, you have to put in work every day to push it forward.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Instagram world. There's a little bit of a pivot there for you. Just because, I mean, some people are going to be into the weight stuff, but we're going to have some people that are just happy being obese with themselves that we're going to
let them hear through the crunching in there.
Exactly. But there are... there are a lot of other famous Instagram accounts in the world. Do you have any relationship with these people? Have you ever met these people?
Who are you talking about?
Fat Jewish, Fuck Jerry.
So the Fat Jewish got me started.
Right.
For no reason. For absolutely no reason. Just because, like, that's how he is. If he likes you, he likes you. If he doesn't like you, you're never going to get yourself out of that hole. So it's ironic because when he was getting skewered by the press for plagiarizing and stealing people's material.
Right.
I was getting tagged two or three times a day in my original content. So these people that were crying or whatever, that were probably, and I don't want to get too into this because I know you asked another question, but...
No, we can get into it. I don't mind at all.
Like if you take a picture of your dog one day making a funny face and you write a funny caption and that's all you ever contribute to the internet, good luck making a following. You can't do it like that. You have to, again, consistently pump out content. So that when people finally get to your page and they start scrolling around, they go, holy shit, this guy made this meme? I've seen it 20 times in 15 different places. So when you become known as a creator, like I did, because the Fat Jewish and Fuck Jerry were like the Sugar Hill Gang of the rap game.
Yeah, like, OGs.
They were the first. They will always be known. But the Sugar Hill Gang is also known for not writing the song that they rapped.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it is what it is. Like you can, there's tons of people who don't write their own music today, but they're still stars because they have that quality. Not everyone who's good in the studio wants to be on stage. You know what I mean? So just because you are able to produce a little bit of content doesn't mean you're going to be able to get a following. And the early adapters are always going to get more shine. But there's definitely a second wave of recognition coming for people like myself, Shithead Steve, Champagne Emojis, Moad, Sunny Side Up, Friend of Bay, Davy Dave. These guys, the Funny Introvert, like these guys that make quality, like laugh out loud material multiple times a day that are funny like comedians. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they're coming up now. They're in the 300,000 to 500,000 range. I got lucky. I think my name helped. I think the fact that I make my own memes helped. I think the fact that the Fat Jew built me up to like 300,000 without even batting an eye helped.
And you make all your own memes? Everything that is on there is yours? Or is it like a combination?
Unless I tag somebody. But I like making my own more.
And like it's like a murky water to try and make memes. You know, it's like a hard thing to do. Like, do you ever find yourself like whiffing on something you thought would be like really?
Oh, yeah.
It just happens all the time.
All the time.
And it's just like, what, how do you know? It's just like an intuition, huh?
Well, the problem is, like, if you're a stand-up comedian, which I've done, if the audience doesn't laugh, that joke gets removed from your act.
Right.
And that's it. You don't ever try it again. It wasn't the mood. It wasn't your delivery. The joke was not funny.
Right.
And that's fine.
Right, right.
When you post a meme on Instagram, there's like this little undercurrent of like people being mad at Instagram because they're making so many changes now. And there's a page called Memes for Memers that's really funny because he's always talking about the conversations we're having on the side. Like, yo, is Instagram slow today? Is it down for you? Do you think the algorithm? I think I've been shadow banned. I don't think they're showing my stuff because sometimes you just don't make funny shit and you don't get a lot of likes on it. So you blame it on something else. I wish I didn't know what a good amount of likes was in 1 minute and 5 minutes and 10 minutes. But I do.
Right, especially for your numbers. You know,
exactly.
And as your numbers grow, you know what's a good amount in like a minute.
A minute, 30 seconds.
You know how well that, or you know how funny the joke was.
I don't know how funny it was. I just know how many likes it got. Because sometimes I'll leave stuff. Like back to the gym thing, I made a meme of Shaquille O'Neal and Simone Biles standing next to each other. What happened?
It's just every time Shaquille O'Neal's name comes up, I say, oh, damn.
Oh, shit. So, Shaquille O'Neal was in there.
Oh, damn.
and Simone Biles. And he's obviously huge and she's tiny. So, my caption was, when you get a protein shake at the gym and there's a little left over, so they put it in an extra cup. And it bombed. But I was like, fuck it. That's funny.
Right,
I'm
right.
leaving it. Sometimes I just go full... like Clerks, like Kevin Smith. Like, I'm making this, and I don't care who likes it. I have to make
it. This is for me.
This is for me.
Yeah.
Like when he made Clerks, from what I understand, like, it's in black and white. It was no funding. Like, he shot that shit on a shoestring budget, but because he stayed true to himself and he hit it right out of the park, he developed a cult following. I want in between a cult following and a mass following. Like, I want to be able to reach the masses, but I want to hit them deep. I want to go deep and wide.
It seems like you care about what's funny to you,
nice.
But you also care. little girth joke there. But you care about what's funny to you, but you also care about what's funny to the people, and you're trying to find a balance between them.
Yeah, like a Hollywood actor will do one movie for themselves that nobody's ever heard of, and then they'll do one blockbuster just to pay the bills and to keep everyone happy.
And that's the cycle you're on, one for me, one for you type thing.
No, it's more like five for me, one for you, maybe.
That's nice.
Yo, talk a little bit. This has piqued my interest while you were going over it, but like the algorithms in Instagram, like, you're pretty much like part of your job, like part of your, I know you don't take a lot of ad money, but still it's like a good way to promote your brand is Instagram.
Yeah.
And we kind of live in the same world where it's like, it is a part of our, not just social media, like showing our friends, like it's actually a part of like how we pay the bills. So what have you learned about Instagram, like the inner workings of Instagram that are so, like, to me, they're like so murky and I have no idea what's going on?
It's a mystery.
There are algorithms
even to you.
Things.
There are algorithms. It's a mystery even to me. And if somebody tells you they have it figured out, they're full of shit. There's times you don't post. Like, you don't post between 11 p.m. and 10 a.m.
Ever. You're a sucker if you're posting at those times.
You're drunk. And you're a personal page and you don't care. You know what I mean? But if you want people to see what you're posting, you need to post between 10 a.m. and 10:30 the latest.
Yeah.
But like, and there's people will say you have to post at 5 o'clock. I've posted stuff at 4:30 that's crushed, and I've posted stuff at 5:05 that's just died. So
it's not like you can just hit a sweet spot and no matter what hits the trampoline is flying.
Exactly.
It's like you have to, it still has to be
exactly.
a good piece of content.
It's got to be quality, and it'll do better at those times. But it'll do well on its own because the algorithm, being that it's not chronological anymore, which is good because that's what they say killed Twitter. Twitter's like, you know, Twitter's having a very, very, very tough time. And it's
right.
because, like, on Twitter, do you guys individually use Twitter? I know Barstool
yeah.
Sports has a Twitter, but
yeah,
you individually use it?
Yeah.
So you ever get followed by somebody big and then, like, you know, you get followed and you're like, oh, wow, they have 500,000 followers. And then
yeah.
you're like... oh, they're following 500,000
right, exactly,
people.
Right, exactly.
Who is this person?
So it's a bot. Okay, cool.
Right.
So there's just so much noise on Twitter, you can't filter through it.
Right.
You can't go to your timeline and have fun.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So when you go to Instagram, the algorithm makes it harder for us, but it also makes you focus on what you really think is funny. Because I know when The Rock posts something, he's not watching like how many likes it gets. You know what I mean?
Right.
These people that have real brands outside of Instagram.
I bet you he takes notice.
Well, he may go, well, whatever good for him is, like, oh, I got 30,000 likes in 10 minutes. Cool.
Right.
You know, like, so I'm sure that he may be cognizant of it, but he's not going to delete a picture because it doesn't
right,
do well.
Of course, of course.
You know what I mean?
Right.
The more focused your brand is on Instagram, the more you're subject to, like, how it treats you. You know what I mean? Mm. Where, like, my wife posts a picture on Instagram. She may know, like, if she averages a certain amount of likes, she may know if it's higher, but she's not going to know why. She's not going to have any idea why, and she's not going to try and recreate that later on. She's just going to post a picture of our son.
Does your wife ever come to you for social media advice? Like, what should I caption this? Like,
no.
What's, no, not at
no,
all?
She's
not, like,
so
giving
not
your expertise?
That. No, she doesn't. She's very she's very supportive in the sense that, like, I had to come here today.
Right.
So she's got the kids. She's pregnant. She's got stuff going on at the house. She's got to take care of stuff. And she never, ever, ever, ever gives me a hard time about doing anything. But as far as, like, caring about what I do.
She's not into it.
No. The biggest thing I've ever done as a result of this, and probably one of the coolest things I've ever done in my life, is ABC Nightline did a piece on me on my Instagram account. And when I woke up the next morning, I was like, Jess, you want to watch it? First of all, nobody stayed up to watch it with me, which hurt.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That's amazing.
But, oh, damn.
Oh, damn. So when I woke up the next morning, I was like, Jess, you want to watch the ABC Nightline thing? And she goes, I have too much stuff to do. So I was like, oh, shit. Nobody cares. And then I asked my son. I was like, GJ, you want to watch Daddy on TV? He was like, nah. And I was like, wow, I really have to stay grounded in here.
They're keeping
They're
you grounded.
Easy for you.
Yeah, for sure. If this happened when I was 25.
Parties. We're popping bottles.
Forget about it. I would have ruined it for sure, 100%. Front page newspaper style.
It's such a new, unique space where you're successful in comedy. Like, do you have any idea of, like, where it's going to go or where, like, people who are excellent at Instagram comedy are going to be? Like, how can you grow your brand? How can you blossom? Like, what can you turn this into?
And also, just to add on to what he said, to monetize, because I know that you're saying you don't enjoy taking, you know, you're not going to promote a product you don't necessarily believe in just for $2,000. So, like, on top of what he said, also monetize.
Yeah. I'm not gonna whore my page out, but I have started thinking a little differently about that because it's definitely part of making this sustainable, right? So if I do want to make it, I have to kind of not compromise my morals, but I have to be a little smarter and a little more business savvy about how I use my page. So if someone wants to pay me to post something on my page, and it's not completely out of left field, I have to at least consider it. Now, that's what I've been telling myself. But I'm much more of a long game guy. So as far as building the brand, it's totally uncharted territory. You have guys like Fuck Jerry who have completely engulfed themselves in Instagram and don't do much outside of it. They do a lot of monetized posts. They have that game, What Do You Meme, which is really successful. They pre-sold, like, I think $400,000 worth of the game, which is huge. They basically paid for it with that, you know, they probably cost them not that much to do it, so they made money before they even did anything. Then you have guys like the Fat Jew who get, like, endorsement deals and had a show deal.
Alcohol brand, doesn't he have, like,
he
a
made
wine?
A wine, yeah. A wine. And apparently, I mean, I don't drink, but apparently it's very good.
I've heard that as well.
It's
a,
like,
rosé, right?
People love it. Yeah, people, the girls and guys, it's apparently very good rosé. It's marketed very simply. It's marketed in a meme tone, like, family time is hard. It says on one of the bottles of Chardonnay, it's called White Girl Rosé.
Right.
But
so when do we see your rosé, or what is your rosé?
So my book is very important to me.
Dumbbells.
But it's definitely definitely not. I have something coming out which I really can't speak about because there's an embargo on it, like a press embargo. We're not supposed to talk about it.
Right.
But it is my rosé. And when I can talk about it, I will definitely let you guys know. But it's right in line with who I am. It's right in line with what I do. And it's so marketable and so easy to monetize because there's little tiny purchases in there. You know what I mean?
An app.
I mean, I don't know what that means.
That does sound deep.
Coming from me, I'm an app guy.
What could that possibly mean?
Yeah.
So there are like verticals that you can create through the success and followings that you build on Instagram.
For sure. But I was just having this conversation today. Just because I have a book and just because I have a million followers and just because people know who I am doesn't mean I'm making money. I have to be smart about it. Exposure doesn't always mean money. You have to be able to convert it. And when you're starting in uncharted territory, you have to you got to be real creative with how you make money. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think if you are somebody who reposts other people's material and you have an eye for comedy and a knack for finding what's funny and what's viral, you begin and end on Instagram and you're not going to go any further. If you're writing your own comedy, you write a comedy. Maybe you get on a team of writers for a show or something. You go the more traditional route, or you just keep building your page and eventually you just make a living off of sponsored posts.
But those are all very
inside the box things. Someone's going to come out with something crazy.
Right. We kind of live in that world a little bit, which is Barstool Sports. Instagram is big, but it's not so, it's a kind of a continuation of the brand, or it's like that's our social media arm.
Yeah.
You know, and like it's nice, and a lot of people mean it's probably the most followed. It is the most followed part of our brand.
Instagram
is.
Yeah, it's a good place to be.
I think it's like we have 2.1 million.
Something like that.
But at the same time, it's not everything we are, and I think it just, at the end of the day, serves the purpose of hopefully bringing people to the website, which is where we monetize.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it's through merchandise or through ads in the website or built-in ads and videos or so on and so forth. But it's interesting because we just live in that world too a little bit.
Yeah. Well, what's great about it is what makes it so hard is that nobody knows what they're doing.
Right.
So there, you have Google AdSense, and like maybe you get somebody who wants to, you know, I don't know, pay you guys for a permanent spot on your site or whatever. But aside from that, how do you make money? It's very difficult. It's a tricky question. And I think the better I surround myself with people who are creative, like it's basically like I think of it like 3D printing a job. Like you're creating something out of nothing. Like there is no job title for a guy who makes money on Instagram making ads and and writing a book or whatever. Like I don't even tell people I do that. I work for a fence company. I do sales for a fence company.
Right.
That's it. Because it just ends the right in the butt. Oh, okay, cool. Sounds very boring. I'm not going to ask you any more questions about it.
Right.
But I'm also 36. So the fact that I have an Instagram page is a little they can't fathom it. They're like, isn't that for kids?
Right.
No, kids are dumb. They don't know how to write jokes that are funny.
Right.
It should be a man.
It's a man's game.
It's a grown man's
game. It's a grown-ass man's game.
Awesome. Well, I think we're coming to about an hour, so we'll wrap up. But
good times.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming. And do you have anything else?
No, I just apologize for talking so much.
No, it's a
pleasant surprise. You're much more than an Instagram account, which we are we're very excited to experience ourselves.
Yep. Happy is a New Rich. It's already – where do we find it?
On Amazon.
On Amazon.
Yeah.
Also, do you guys know that you can watch Showtime on Amazon?
No.
I've been watching Billions, and I watch it through Amazon. I don't have a Showtime subscription. I just buy
Amazon
it. You can buy it, Amazon Prime. Interesting. Anyways, Happy is the New Rich. Frank Sinatra.
Tank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra, not related to Tank Sinatra. My guy. All right, Young Happy.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
you.
Thanks
Appreciate
for having
it.
Me.
Thanks.
that crush you, that fed you for quarter like joy, and we back on that bullshit. We came up from nothing, we started on less, most money, but now it's the fourth list. We really was doing shit, look at it. Look from flex on this beef, I'm informants. I think they record it. Listen, you hear that?
We might just get here with the reaper. Everyone home for the summer, so let's not do nothing illegal. We might just get here with the reaper.